Blog Talk Radio.
This is Frater Ralph with Temple of the Infinite Universe Radio, and I'd like to welcome all of you here this wonderful Thursday evening. We had a tremendous break in the weather. I mean, we had been super hot, and now things are cooling. We had a nice rain the other day, and I had a wonderful experience this morning. I had the screen doors propped open on our patio here at the Temple of the Infinite Universe. And we have hummingbird feeders around the outside of the screened-in porch. And one hummingbird flew in through the open door and found itself trapped on the screened-in porch. And I gave the poor thing a few minutes to try to find itself, find its way out on its own. And it just wasn't doing it. It was flying into the screen. I was afraid it was going to hurt itself. So I was able to go up to it, and by the time I got to it, it had worn itself out. And the poor thing was chirping lightly when I put my hand around it. And then after I got my hand completely around it, the poor thing started to cry. I mean, it was whimpering, just like you would hear the whimpering of a small child. And I had never heard a hummingbird make that kind of sound before. And I could tell the poor thing was terrified, so I quickly took the hummingbird out outside and opened my hand, and it sat there for a minute or two, and finally it realized it was free and stopped whimpering and just shot straight up into the air. And then about a minute or two later, I saw a pair of hummingbirds come on down and check out the feeders and then fly off. So, I mean, that was a first for me. I mean, I've had hummingbirds fly into the window and knock themselves out, and I've picked them up and held them for a while and then put them back outside where they would regain their senses and then fly off. But this was the first time I had a hummingbird in my hand that just made that whimpering sound. And I guess they do, and it sounded, to me anyway, it sounded exactly like a small, frightened child just whimpering. Oh, but that's how things have been going here at the temple this morning. I'm broadcasting outside on the screened-in porch right now. I'm going to go back inside here in a moment and do the rest of the program from there. I had hoped we'd get some more nature sounds, but one of our part-time neighbors came down and is mowing the grass. So I think we're instead of nature sounds, I'm getting lawnmower sounds. So I'm going to go back inside and we'll start our program and get right into our topic, which tonight is meditation. Know thyself karmically. And by karmically, I mean that as we go through life, and for those of you who believe as I do in past lives, reincarnation, multiple lives, we carry a certain energy with us from one life to the next. And this energy can be deemed as being positive, as in good karma, or this energy can be deemed as negative, as in bad karma. Now, to me, I really don't believe in bad karma or good karma. I think karma is karma. Karma is energy. And all energy eventually works out for our good. It may seem bad and difficult. It may seem terrible, you know, at the time that we're living through it. And it may especially seem bad if we have to carry it around from one incarnation to the next, or from one year to another in this current incarnation. But actually, all things eventually do work out for our benefit. I mean, that's my article of faith. I'm taking it on faith. That's just my take on things. But a lot of times we don't really understand why things happen the way they do in life. I mean, the good things, when the good things happen to us and we don't understand why, I mean, we just accept it. We just say, hey, life is good, and I don't know what I did to deserve this, but hey, it's great. I'm going to roll with it. But at the same time, when bad things happen, or at least when things that we deem to be bad happen to us, you know, we sit around, we whine, we mope, we complain. We may be angry at the universe or God or you know, just anybody who's at hand, and say, what did I do to deserve this? Why is everything working out against me? You know, why is it that nothing that I seem to succeed? And, you know, people, there are folks that have difficult times in a wide variety of areas. Some, it may be love and romance. Others, it may be business related. Others, it may be health. But, you know, bad things happen, and we don't know exactly why they happen. And one explanation that has been given in Eastern philosophy, and I happen to agree with it. My wife doesn't, but she's got her own point of view on this. But the idea of karma. And we carry an energy with us. And if we learn from that energy, if we deal with that energy properly, we can take care of our karma. We can use it for our greater good. If it's negative karma or bad karma, you know, we can learn from it, we can stop making more bad karma, and we can eventually burn off that bad karma, deal with it, learn from it, and then just carry on. But if we refuse to learn from that energy, if we refuse to learn from our past experiences in our bad karma, if you will, then we will be doomed to repeat it over and over and over again until we finally figure it out, learn to face it, and learn to deal with it, and learn whatever it is that we are meant to learn from the experience. And this is getting into one of the eternal questions, one of the big questions that, you know, ministers, rabbis, theologians will face, you know, over and over again, the question of why do bad things happen to good people? Because a lot of times, you know, you see good people going through problems that we don't think they deserve. You know, just tragedy strikes, and what did they do to deserve it? And all we can say is, well, nothing. You know, sometimes we can see the reason behind it, but, you know, sometimes tragedy strikes and it just seems to be no good reason for it happening. And, you know, to illustrate this, this is a, well, I was going to get into a little discussion of Job, but I'm just going to go into my real life story here. I was a pastor at a Christian church, senior pastor at a church in Hickory County, Missouri, up until about 6-7 years ago. And one of my first funerals at that church, was a man that I had known, I had worked with for some time when I was working at a manufacturing plant, and I was later called to be a pastor, and I left the manufacturing plant to go to that church, and, you know, this man and his wife and daughter followed, and they became fairly good, you know, parishioners for about a year. And one day, one morning, this man got up and just decided life was no longer worth living. And he walked out into the woods, put a gun to his head, and pulled the trigger. And the family had been going through financial difficulty before his suicide. And then after he committed suicide, the extra expenses of the funeral, all that, he did not have insurance. It was just one of those situations that you just really felt sorry for those that were left behind. You felt sorry for the man that decided to take his own life, but you also felt especially sorry for the survivors because they were heartbroken, of course, beyond heartbroken. And it was just asking themselves the question, why? Why did he do this? And I could offer no answers. The only thing that came to my mind, and I did not say this at the funeral, nor did I say it after, but the only thing that made sense to me both then and now is that the man was given to drink, and I just figured he woke up one morning in a fit of alcoholic depression, decided life was no longer worth living, and while in that severely depressed state of mind, just decided to end it all. And when we were doing the funeral for this man at the church, his wife was speaking her mind, and right there in the church basement, she was saying, you know, I wish he was still here with us so I could put my arms around him and tell him how much I loved him. And his brother, he had his brother there. He had actually his wife, his daughter, his father and mother were still alive at that time, and two brothers. And one brother, after the wife made her statement that I wish he was still here, so I could tell him how much I loved him, he spoke his mind, and without batting an eye, without thinking, just he emoted. He just said, I wish the son of a bitch was still alive so I could kill him for all the shit he's put us through with this. And there was some nervous laughter that came from the rest of the family because they knew exactly what he was talking about. And he looked at me and he clarified and he said, you know, he should not have put us through this. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know why he did this to us. And that's really, he caught, I thought, the entire emotion of suicide right there, is that it's not just taking your own life. It's putting those that love you through hell and just taking them down into a similar state of depression. And of course, when you're in that frame of mind that says, I'm going to kill myself, you are just so self-absorbed that you don't see that. You don't see that happening. But I believe that you do see it after the fact when you're in the world of spirit looking down at your survivors and what it is you're putting them through. The point I'm trying to make is that nobody then or now really knew exactly why this tragedy had to happen to this family. And, of course, I don't think it had to happen. You know, the man had a choice. He could have faced his fears, faced his depression, taken steps to learn from the negative circumstances that life had put in his path. Instead, he chose to run from it, and run from it by committing the ultimate act, And the family then, and I know that they still have not made peace with this, but they could not figure out exactly why did this have to happen? Why did this happen? And there are some things in life that the only thing we can say is in the fullness of time, the meaning will be made clear. In the fullness of time, we will see the plan of the Almighty at work. However convoluted it is, we will see why this took place the way it did. And we will come to understand, or we will at least come to accept. And when I say the fullness of time, I mean an indefinite period. For some, it may be several years in this lifetime. And for others, it may be many lifetimes in the future. And I will get a little bit more into that as I progress into this topic more deeply. Right now, I'm going to stop right there and play a song by Blind Willie Johnson, Soul of a Man.
Well, want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. Want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man? I'm going to ask the question, please answer if you can. Is anybody sure and can tell me, just what is the soul of a man? Well, what somebody tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man. I traveled different countries, I've traveled in forest land. I've found nobody could tell me, just what about the soul of a man. Well, won't somebody tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man. I saw a crowd stand talking, I just came up in time. Was teaching the lawyer, the doctor. Well, a man need nothing but his mind. Well, I want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a God. I want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man. I read the Bible often, I try to read it right. And for as I could understand, nothing but a burning God. I want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man. When Christ had entered the temple, the people all stood amazed. Was teaching the lawyers, doctors, how to raise a man from the grave. Well, I want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. Want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man. Well, I want somebody to tell me, answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me, just what is the soul of a man.
Hey, this is Frater Ralph back. Now, when bad things happen, tragic things happen in our lives, a lot of times we think that they are Well, they are terrible. But we think they're even more terrible because we have a very limited view of time, very limited view of life. To most people, when you talk about a human life, you think in terms of how we used to write papers on famous people in grade school. You know, they're born, they lived, and at such and such a time, they died. That's it. Amen. End of story. You're born, you live, you die. And in between there, I mean, over the course of that life, from birth to death, if a person has a nice life, a gentle life, a lot of success, a loving family, a nice home, enough material goods to make their life comfortable, we tend to think of such a person as being blessed. And boy, how'd they get so lucky, and everything just works out for that person. And with other people, if after they're born, they just seem to have one difficulty after another, nothing seems to work out, they experience tragedy, they eke by, they barely have enough to make a living, they can barely make ends meet, and then they later die under terrible or tragic circumstances. We look at that person and we question, if God is a loving God, if the universe is a nice, wonderful place to live, how can something like that be allowed to happen? And we just can't make any sense of it, because to us, it's all that matters, it's all that we can see in this life, life in the material world. And that's all we understand from birth to death. We understand everything in a material sense, in a material way. And a lot of us assume, even religious folks that talk about, you know, when you die, you go on to a better place, which is something I definitely do believe. Even religious folk that believe in an afterlife tend to think that, boy, when you're dead, that's it. There's nothing more. And we just kind of take it by faith. And sometimes we even, you know, we even question, boy, I hope that they've gone on to good things after their death. I hope that somehow their soul survives. And one of the fruits of meditation or a near-death experience, you know, some people get this certainty through the near-death experience, and others of us get it through meditation, through past life recall. But we have this certainty through experience, through experiential knowledge, that death is not the end, that there is something greater that we reach out to, that we touch. That death, in the fullness of time, when it's allowed to take its proper course, not when it's rushed into, like through suicide, when death is allowed to happen at the proper time, at the proper place, under the right circumstances, it's a beautiful thing. It's like a rebirth. In every tarot deck I've ever seen, you know, there is a death card. And that death card is always interpreted as death and rebirth. The two are connected. And for folks that have had a near-death experience where they've been allowed to leave their body for a short period of time, see what goes on in the spiritual world, and then are allowed to return to the physical world back into their bodies, they know this rebirth experience. There have been folks that I have heard relate their stories that when they had the near-death experience, they didn't feel dead. They felt super alive. Their hearing was better than ever. Their eyesight was better than ever. They could sense, reach out. They could travel at the speed of thought. You know, some folks have related stories that they wanted to know. They died at the hospital. They wanted to know what their family was doing. And bam, they were transported instantaneously to the family home. And they could see what you know, what Uncle Bob was doing or Cousin Agnes or, you know, their children, their husbands, their spouses. You know, they could see it all. And then after they were allowed to return to their bodies, rejoin the living in the material world, for a lot of them, it was like that was death, having to leave the world of spirit and return to their physical body and rejoin the so-called living in this world. But when you cross over that barrier, you know, you come to the conclusion, the undeniable fact, which is undeniable if you've experienced it. For those that haven't experienced it, it's not undeniable, it's questionable. But for those who have had this experience, it is the undeniable fact that when we transition over from this life, this material world, into the world to come, it is a rebirth. And then for those of us who have, through the practice of meditation, been able to recall past lives, some of us have been able to not only remember what we did in past lives, but we also recall our past deaths. And we know that death, as horrible as it seems, is not the end. It's just the final stage of one earthly life that allows us then to be reborn into another spiritual life, which then sets the stage for another rebirth in a material existence until we finally reach that stage when the cycle of life and death and rebirth is something we no longer have to repeat, and we can go on and rejoin the divine in the spiritual world. But now, when we come to the understanding, and I'm going to call it when we see the big picture, that there is more to this life than what we see here in the material world, we can begin to gain a better understanding of why it is bad things happen to otherwise good people. We begin to understand that this life is a training ground. We come into this material universe to learn our lessons, to develop spiritually, to develop as souls, seemingly individual souls. And we carry with us a certain assignment from the world of spirit. Now, for some, that assignment may be easy. It may be as easy as falling off a log. It may be pleasant. And other souls are gifted with a job that is far more difficult. And I believe it is because certain souls decide to, for whatever reason, take on the more challenging task because they want to be helpful. When one soul overcomes a difficulty and learns a great lesson, all souls benefit from it, because at a root level, all souls are connected. We seem to be individualized in this material part of our existence because that's the way we are given to learn our lessons. But after we've learned our lessons and rejoined the world of spirit, all souls will rejoin as one, and one soul can touch another very easily. Because at a root level, we're not separate. We are all one. And so some souls heroically decide to take on the more difficult tasks and place themselves in danger and put themselves in more difficult situations. And for others, still other souls, that perhaps they decided to take on a difficult task, but didn't fully realize what would be involved, some souls decide to run away from the job that they were given to do in this material world. And for them, for us, when we take on a responsibility in this material world and we decide that we've changed our minds, we no longer want to do the job, we don't want to learn this lesson, we want to run from it, we want to hide from it. Kind of like, you know, the man that committed suicide. When we decide to not do what we agreed to do, when we say, I'm not going to learn this lesson, it's too rough, it's too difficult, I'm bailing out, we are still saddled with that responsibility to learn that lesson that we came into this world to learn. And that is where what we call negative karma comes into play, at least from my point of view. We are then reborn into another life, carrying with us the baggage of the previous life, that karma, be it deemed negative or positive. And if we failed to learn our lesson in a previous life, and we decide to run away from that lesson in a previous life, then in our next life, we will be faced with that same lesson, only from a different point of view, and on a far greater level of difficulty. As long as we keep running from it and shirking our responsibility to learn and to grow spiritually, the lessons get more difficult and more difficult and more difficult. That's the bad side of the story. The good side of the story, though, is that once we decide that we are not going to run anymore, that we are going to stand our ground, face these difficulties down, and learn our lesson from them, then the bad karma will be lifted. We will go through some difficulty in learning our lesson, especially if it's a lesson we've been putting off for, well, let's say 1,000 years or 10, 20 lifetimes. Yes, in the final analysis, that lesson might be a very difficult lesson to learn. But once learned, it will be infinitely worthwhile. And we will be forever lifted, you know, from the burden of that negative karma. Once faced, and once the lesson is learned, the negative karma is lifted. And we can see experiences or examples of this, you know, in our day-to-day lives. Think of people that just seem to be locked in an endless cycle, like, amongst the families of alcoholics, you see like wives that are married to alcoholics, and they just seem to be addicted to being married to an alcoholic, because some of them, they'll be married to one alcoholic who is pretty bad off, and then they decide, I'm not going to mess around with this guy anymore. They divorce him, and then they turn around and they marry another alcoholic who is even worse off than the first one was. And then they decide, okay, I'm not going to mess around with this guy anymore either. So they divorce the second alcoholic, and then they go off and they find a third guy who is also an alcoholic, who is also worse than the second guy was. And they just seem to be addicted themselves to jumping out of the frying pan and leaping into the fire, taking themselves out of a bad situation, and then turning around and putting themselves into an even worse situation. And we may ask the question, every time I've seen it, I have asked the question, why do they do this to themselves? Is it some sort of insanity? And of course, the answer is that this, in many cases, this comes from early childhood. That the person was shown that this is what normal life was supposed to be like. And they never really questioned that. And at a subconscious level, they learned this false lesson that this is what reality is supposed to be like. And along the way, they may also have learned the lesson that I deserve this because I was born into this type of a family background, and I don't deserve anything better. And of course, that's not the lesson that any of us are put on this earth to learn. We're not put on this earth to learn, I don't deserve anything better. What we are put on this earth to learn is, how can I improve myself, my life, and do whatever it is I can out of love to make the world a better place? But some people run from that simple lesson of learning to love yourself properly and learning to love others properly. And as long as you keep running from a lesson rather than learning from it, you are doomed to repeat the same patterns, the same behaviors, over and over and over again, until finally something clicks and the person says, hey, I don't deserve to be treated like dirt anymore. I deserve better. I am somebody that the universe loves, and I am going to accept that love, and I am going to live that love. And when a person has that realization, makes that declaration, then they unlock themselves from the hell, from the prison that they have unconsciously locked themselves in. Now, that example is from one lifetime. Now, imagine the level of difficulty if that took place not in the course of one lifetime, but over the course of many lifetimes. Imagine the negative energy or the positive energy that can be transmitted, perpetuated from one existence to another. And the benefit of meditation is that slowly, after we put in, like, I don't know, I'm just going to say 10,000 hours or so of time in meditation, we begin to see this bigger picture. And I'm not going to say we see it perfectly. I certainly don't see it perfectly. With me, the way it comes about is I'll have flashes of insight, flashes of intuition. And when I go to sleep at night after a good meditation, a lot of times what will happen is that spirit, or my spirit guide, whom I'm going to call Sophia, she comes to me as a woman, and shows me what I need to know. And she'll show me bits and pieces, glimpses of my past lives. And so far she's shown me a life I had as a musician in 1876. One of the most traumatic past life remembrances I had was as a young child, a young 7-year-old boy in somewhere in the Swiss Alps around the year 400, after the collapse of the Roman Empire, the collapse of civil government in that area at that time. And the way this experience unfolds for me, you know, some people can remember clearly, you know, every past life, kind of like the Buddha. And I'm not one of those folks. Now, the way this unfolds for me is that I will have the dream, and my spirit guide, Sophia, will narrate it for me. And I will see it as a movie, and I will see myself as I was at that time. And Sophia will point the person out and say, this is you. And she'll kind of explain what's going on. And back at that lifetime, as a 7-year-old boy, living at the time of the collapse of the Roman Empire, I was sold into slavery by my parents. My family could no longer afford to keep me. And there was a wandering merchant, traveling merchant, that came through our area, who my parents thought would take care of me. So they sold me to this traveling merchant. And the traveling merchant was one of those folks that when he was around other people, he seemed nice, polite, a great human being. But then when he got alone, his evil, dark side came out. And he turned out to be very abusive towards me. I fell into a fit of depression, fit of despair. And in this one recollection that my spirit guide showed me, as a seven-year-old boy, I decided that I was going to hang myself. And I did. And she showed me the inn where it happened, the doorpost where I had strung the cord. And she showed it to me as it was around the year 400 and as it is today. And today it looks more like a earthen cave than it does a stone inn. But the reason I get into this story is to illustrate how negative energy, or positive energy, either one, in this case, it's negative energy, will dog you from one life to the next. Because to me, when I had that dream, when I had that revelation, a lot of things that I've experienced in this life, at this time, over the past 53 years, began to make perfect sense. See, as a child in this incarnation, I had an overwhelming fear of abandonment. Now, where did that come from? My parents in this incarnation couldn't really figure it out because they gave me no reason to fear that they would try to get rid of me or abandon me. And I knew it made absolutely no logical sense. Why, as a 6 or 7 year old child in this life, would I fear being abandoned or rejected by my parents? Well, the answer actually turns out to be that 1,600 years ago, that happened to me. And I did not deal with it at that time. I chose to run away by throwing a rope over a doorpost and hanging myself. And that negative energy followed me from 400 AD to 1960, 66, 67, something like that, when that same feeling began to resurface. And it made absolutely no sense until Sophia, my spirit guide, allowed me to remember that one bit of my longer, much longer past history. I am going to take a break here. I think we're running out of time anyway. Play a piece of music by Sun Palace, Into Heaven, and I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you. through meditation, one of the gifts that we receive is the ability to know ourselves on a karmic level. And now the examples that I've given here involve past life recall, but that's not the only way that we can know ourselves karmically. As I've said, my past life recall is in no way perfect. It's just bits and pieces, bits of memory that come back. I fully believe that my spirit guide allows me to remember only what I need to remember in order to grow spiritually in this lifetime. And everything else, all the other little bits of information that I don't need to know, it is not revealed to me. Now, other folks can have, you know, perfect past life recall, and others of us don't have perfect. Others that practice meditation may not remember anything about a past life. They may not even remember what they had for breakfast this morning. But they can still know themselves karmically by tuning into their intuition, knowing their feelings, being mindful of their feelings, and paying attention to their intuition and their feelings. You don't have to have perfect or any kind of past life recall in order to know yourself on a karmic level. A lot of times all you need to know, all you need to be able to do, is just to tune in to that still, small voice within that will just let you know, hey, it may not make any logical sense, but this is what you have to do. It may not make any head sense, but this is all going to work out. Just trust. And when I began this broadcast, I was going to get into a little discussion of the book of Job, and I'm going to get into that now. And the book of Job in the Hebrew scriptures, which we Christians kind of irreverently refer to as the Old Testament, we have one of the original suffering servants of the Old Testament. Job is a great guy. God is very pleased with him. And for some reason, we're not really told why, God allows Job to be tested and to be tormented and to suffer greatly. And Job perseveres through it. He loses his wealth. He loses his health. He loses almost everything except his wife. Mrs. Job stays right with him, along with his three do-gooder friends that put him through a little bit of hell, each in their own way. And Job just goes right along with it. He says, "The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And Job comes across as a man of great faith most of the way through the book. But now towards the end, when Job is having a conversation with God, he is allowed to talk with God almost face to face, as it were. And he questions God. You know, why did you put me through this hell? And the only answer that God seems to give poor Job is that, hey, I am the creator of heaven and earth. I set the stars in their place. I put the zodiac in its proper order. You are a mortal man. Trust me. Basically, he just tells Job, trust me, cannot explain to you why you had to go through this ordeal, but trust me, it will work out and it will make sense. Actually, God doesn't even give that assurance that it will make sense in the fullness of time. He just says, basically, I am the Lord God. Trust me. And Job is just left with that fleeting reassurance that there is no good answer given, not from a human perspective. Certainly not from the perspective of you're given one life and that's it. And if it's a good life, then you're blessed. If it's a bad life, you're cursed. That kind of mentality there. It makes absolutely no sense. But we are told in the book of Job that Job was later rewarded. All that God took away from him, or allowed to be taken away from him, was restored to him. And I believe he received tenfold more throughout the course of his life. But we're not really given the answer. And I think the reason for that is that the answer, the big picture, defies, to a certain extent, human understanding, and defies human explanation and human words. And through remembering past lives, seeing how we were way back then and how we are now, we can get an idea. We can get a good understanding of how things are playing out and why and what we need to do in order to make things better. And through meditation, by tuning into our feelings, tuning into our intuition, we can get that assurance, similar to the assurance given in the book of Job, that, hey, things may look difficult now, but hang in there. Persevere. Don't run away from your lessons. Embrace them and learn from them. And again, in the fullness of time, things will work out. And that's one of the greatest gifts, I think, that we can be given through meditation. Not only just knowing ourselves karmically, but having that sense of peace, that sense of serenity, that even when we're going through the most difficult times that we can imagine, times that would try even Job, we can have that sense of serenity, that sense of peace, that there is an order in the universe, there is a reason why this is happening, and I trust that it will work out. Not only for my greater good, for my benefit, but for the benefit of others as well. It's something we have to take on faith. Our past life memories, our memories from this life, our past experiences, can help us attain a deeper faith. But in the end, it all boils down to that faith. And meditation can help us strengthen that faith, that ability, as of a small child, to trust in the universe, to trust in the source of all. And when that source of all says to us, trust me, this will all work out in the end, we can have that trust, and we can have that knowledge, that karmically, things happen for a reason. May not seem like a good reason at this point in time, but in the fullness of time, it will work out. This is Frater Ralph, wrapping it up for another night and wishing you a blessed evening. If you would like to check out our website, you can at www.hermetictemple.com. And hope to see you all again, or, well, perhaps hear from a few of you. Next broadcast will be this coming Sunday at 6 p.m. I think I'm going to go back to a little discussion about the tarot. Tarot and spirituality will be the topic. So until then, this is Fred or Ralph wishing you a blessed evening and just hoping to see you all again.
Amen. Blessed be.